Okay, today's daf is Tzadik Chen Amabet. We're starting at the bottom, four lines from the bottom. Rabbi Chanina Nafik Lekriyata. Rabbi Chanina went out of the city to the villagers and they asked him the following question. Ramulei Kraya Hadadi. These psukim conflict. K'tiv, Habayit Asher Bana Shlomo LaHashem. When Shlomo built the Heichal, okay, if you look, I have these maps here. You can Google, by the way. I'm trying to remember what I Googled last night. I found this exact map. You can Google maybe map of the Beit HaMikdash and you'll find this exact map, which is a very nice map of the Beit HaMikdash. You can see we're talking about the area called the Heichal, which includes the inner room, which is the Kodesh Kodashim, which we'll see is a square-shaped room, which is going to be 20 by 20 amah. And the Heichal, which is 60 by 20 amot. Okay, that's the area where the Heichal includes the Kodesh Kodashim and the Kodesh. The Kodesh had the Menorah, the Mizbeach, and the Lechem, the Shulchan, where the Lechem HaPanim was. So we're talking about that whole area. So one pasuk says that the house that Shlomo built was 60 amah by 20 amah, with 30 amah height. That's where we get this whole thing about the height being that we saw in the Mishnah, that height being half the amount of the length
except
of the width.
It's not 60 and 20.
Oh, you're right. 80. Sorry, this one isn't. Right. My confusion. This is 60 plus 20 plus 8. Right. This one isn't. This is not from here. It should be 40. Uktiv, but that's actually not what's bothering them here. Okay, uktiv, v'lifnei hadvir esrim ama orech v'esrim ama rochav v'esrim ama komato. Here it says, and the Kodesh Kodashim was 20 by 20 by 20, 20 height. So how could it be that the Heichal's height was 30 and the Kodesh Kodashim's height was 20? Okay, they don't entertain the possibility that maybe
drop ceiling.
That it was a drop ceiling. Okay, they don't entertain that. They assume that if the Heichal, if they said the height of the Heichal, which included the Kodesh Kodashim, was 30, then also inside it should have been 30 in the Kodesh Kodashim. So Amar Lehu. Or a raised floor, right? So instead of saying a raised floor, they're going to kind of say something a little along those lines, but somewhat different. Amar lehu, ki kachashiv misfata kruvim ulemala. When they were talking about 20 amah, okay, what was in the Kodesh Kodashim? There was the Aron. Okay, here you can see a nice picture from the, you can also, if you have the Koran, they have it, or you can look at it in some sort of book you have, if you have a book on the Mikdash. I'll pass around also from the Koran and you can both look. So what do they say? From the top of the Kruvim, there were Kruvim. Okay, there were two sets of Kruvim. One was on top of the Aron. What was in the Kodesh Kodeshim? The Aron. On top of the Aron is a small set of Kruvim. But the Kruvim they're talking about were on the sides of the Aron. There were these two big Kruvim that we're going to learn about today. And they were 10 amot tall, the wings. The wings of the Kruvim was basically a Kruv, and then these big wings spread out. And the wings had a height of 10 amah. So what were they measuring when they talked about the height of the room? So it's like saying a raised floor. They were measuring it from the height of the top of the wings of the Kruvim. So above them, there was 20 amah. So then they say, my kamash malan. So what was it trying to teach us? What was the point of telling us the height from above the Kruvim? What do we gain from doing that instead of just saying the height of the room? Hakamashmalan lemata kilamah. They wanted to teach us that the space below the Kruvim was like the space above the Kruvim. What does that mean? Obviously, it doesn't mean it was the same size because under was 10 and above was 20. But we're going to learn something very interesting. Ma lemala emeshamesh klum, af lemata emeshamesh klum. Just like the space below the wing, above the wings, was empty space, right? There was nothing above the wings, clearly, right? Above the wings was just airspace. Also, below the wings was just airspace. And what do you mean below the wings was airspace? Weren't the Kruvim under the wings? So now they're going to say, Meseele the Rabbi Levi. This supports the statement of Rabbi Levi. De'amar Rabbi Levi. Ve'itema Rabbi Yochanan. Davar ze masoret biyadeinu me'avotenu. Mekom aron u'kruvim eno min amidah. They didn't take up space in the Kodesh Kodashim. Okay? Basically, if you're going to have these wings spread out, right, the assumption is that what's underneath them didn't take up any space. And the Aron didn't take up any space. Now, this is a very strange thing. What does it mean it didn't take up space? Of course, it was there physically, right? The problem is there's all these issues with the measurements. And we're going to see now, okay, we're going to go on a little bit more. Tanya Nami Hachi, Aron Shasa Moshe, Yesh lo revach eser amot lechol ruach veruach. Okay, the Aron that Moshe had made. Now remember, the room was 20 by 20. correct? So if the room is 20 by 20, and it says that the space alongside the Aron, right, on the sides of the Aron, okay, this is 20 by 20. Now you have the Aron, okay? The Aron obviously takes up some space, right? But what they say is there was 10 amah on this side of the Aron and 10 amah on that side of the Aron. Well, it doesn't make sense, exactly. How could it be that the Aron had 10 amah on one side and 10 amah on the other side if the whole room was only 20? So they say it must be that the Aron didn't take up space. Okay, quite strange, right? Quite difficult to understand how it could be the Aron didn't actually take up any space. Okay, I assume they're trying to get into this issue that there must have been something miraculous going on here. It's the Kodesh Kodashim. The Aron, in essence, the space, I don't know exactly what to make of this and how you understand it, but basically they claim that both the Kruvim and the Aron didn't take up space. So now we're going to get into a little bit more about the Kruvim Atzma, how this space issue works. So the Kruvim is going to be a little more easy to understand than the Aron. The Aron, it's a little complicated because how could you say the Aron didn't take up any space, right? The Kruvim, we're going to see, you could sort of understand how the Kruvim didn't take up space. So Amar Rabbanai, Amar Shmuel, Kruvim b'nes hein umdim, sh'ne'emar. Okay, they were somehow standing, you know, like a b'nes. We'll talk about what this means. Sh'ne'emar b'chamesh amot kanaf ha'kruv ha'echad, b'chamesh amot kanaf ha'kruv ha'shenit. Okay? Each, there's two kruvim, one on either side of the Aron. Okay, you can look again at the picture. And each wing of each kruv, okay, which comes out to four wings altogether, was five amot. Now you're going to see where the problem is. Because, okay, imagine I'm an angel, my body, you can look. So out of my body comes the wings. Now, there's no body space. That's what's going to basically cause the issue. That the assumption is that the wings went all the way out. In other words, it says it. It's not just the assumption. It says it in the pasuk. Yeah. So, what?
Just measure them from the middle of the back.
Measure
the wings from the middle of the back.
So the issue is, where did the wings come from? Assuming wings work like arms, there's a body. And the wings come out of one from each side. So you can't measure from the back because you still, there's a body space, okay? You can already look, you can see from the picture that they obviously have them looking differently. But assuming they're like a person, so their wings come out from the body, in which case they take up more than 20 amma because each one is five, and that's going to basically create a problem. So what do they say? So chamesh amot kanaf ha'kruv echad, chamesh amot kanaf ha'kruv ha'shenit, eser amot miksot knafav va'ad ktsot knafav. Right, there's 10 amot from the edges of the wings to the edges of the wings, right? From basically one to the other. So gufayu hechi havu kaime. So where were their bodies, if that's the case? Elashmamina b'neis he'omdim. Okay, it must be that there was somehow miraculous, there was some miracle that they were somehow, you know, they didn't take up space. So now what's particularly interesting about this sugya is that we're now going to have, if I count correctly, I don't remember now if I counted correctly, but I think there's about five rabbis who ask questions on this. This was told by Rabbanai, said this in the name of Shmuel, who says this concept that it was so miraculous, somehow there was something miraculous going on here, that they didn't take up space, just like we saw before that they say about the Aron also. So now we're going to have five attacks by different rabbis saying, what do you mean? We could come up with each one comes up with an explanation, like what Ruth, you were trying to suggest. Each one comes up with some way that they could be 10 amot long, the wings, right? That each one had, you know, their wings were 10 amot, five each, and then altogether 20. And yet there was still space for them and their bodies in the room. So each one is going to come up with a different possible explanation, basically knocking down this concept that the Kruvim b'neis hen omdi. So here we start. Mat kifla abaye. V'dilma boltin k'tarnagolim havu kaime, which is, I think, the way that we do it in the picture. They're like a tarnagol. What's a tarnagol? Their wings come out from, it's not like a person where the wings come out of the sides. The wings come out from the same place together. The wings are above kind of the body, and the body's underneath. And that the wings can basically take up there's no space for the body, basically. You don't need space for the body. The body's part. They're boltin k'tarnagolim havu kaime, and therefore, why don't you just say that? Matkifla Rava, here's another question. V'dilma zeh shelo keneged zeh havu kaime. Maybe they weren't the way you think, lined up in the room, right? But maybe they were
in front of the other.
Right, one was a little in front of the other. And then if the one's a little in front of the other, well, then there's room. One could, you know, they overlap in terms of the space in the room. Right? We all know if you have a room that's 20 by 20 and you take the diagonal is much longer. Maybe they were along the diagonal line of the room. Okay? And then obviously this planet is a lot more than 20.
If one was overlapping the other, then if this was the 20, this was the 10, this was the 10, and they were overlapping, then it would be not 20 across because they're overlapping and there's that space. That's
no, because then you're adding back in the body.
Right. Then you take care of the body. The body takes up space. The whole point was, let's say the body is 2 amot, let's say, or I don't know, let's say. So you have 2 amot, and then you have 10, and then you have 10. So how do you deal? That's 22. So if you have
they overlap
mm-hmm. over you know, one amot, like okay. They each go 1 amot over, then you have it. Okay, Matkavla Rav Huna Bered Rav Yoshua. V'dilma Beita Me'ilai Ravach. Remember we saw this yesterday? That maybe it was wider at the top, so that the wings were higher up and the room was 20 by 20 at the bottom. But maybe as it went up, the walls widened a little bit, which is a strange... It's hard to imagine when they give all the measurements exactly that really it started changing further up. Also, there was a barrier between the Kodesh and the Kodesh Kodeshim, so obviously at the top it would have to have moved up. It would have been a little strange. Anyway, Matkifla Rav Papa, V'dilma Mekaf Habukai Feyadayhu. Maybe their hands, meaning their wings, were bent in a little bit, right? The way people stand sometimes with their hands bent in. So maybe their hands were bent in. In other words, they were 10 amo, but it went down a little bit. The last amma of each one or something was, you know, lower, or half an amma of each wing. Or again, it depends how much space. I was just making a number that maybe the body takes up 2 amma. Matkifla... Rav Ashi, this is the last one. V'dilma shachufe habu mishlachafe. Maybe they were crossed over. Maybe they're, you know, they made like a crisscross. Okay, in which case, again, you wouldn't have this issue. It's like the overlapping. The overlapping is that one is a little in front of the other. Here, it's that they cross over each other. Okay, in which case, again, there's an overlap. Okay, so those were all responses to this concept that the kruvim bin neseim omdim. So on the one hand, Shmuel says it. On the other hand, a lot of people take issue with it. Kitzad heim omdim. Now we want to know how were they standing? Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar. Chad amar, there's a machlok between Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar. We don't know who says what. Chad amar pnehem ish alachiv. V'chad amar pnehem labayit. Okay, one person says that they actually faced each other. And one says that they faced the Hechal. Okay, that they faced the other, right, the Kodesh part. So, away from the Kodesh Kodeshim. So now, why does each one say it? Because there are psukim to support each reading. So now we're obviously going to say, okay, so first of all it says, here, let's read it inside. Leman de'amar p'nehem ish alachiv. All right, so instead of introducing the psukim, they're going to introduce them as part of the question. Okay, so if you say p'nehem ish alachiv, okay, which is a pasuk in, I think by Shmuel it says, in Shmot Perek Kafhei, okay, you can see in the Torah Or, it says, Vayu akrovim porsei knafayim lemala, sochachim bekamfehen al hakaporet, u'pnehem ish alachiv, el hakaporet u'pnei akrovim. Okay, so they faced each other according to Shmot. In Divrei HaYamim, it says, where's the pasuk? Right. In Divrei HaYamim Bet, Perek Gimel, Pasuk Yud Gimel, it says, Kamfei HaKruvim Ha'ele, Porsim Amot Esrim, here you have it, the 20 Amma, V'heim Omdino Raglehem Upnehen Labayit. Okay? So it sounds like they're not facing each other. So, two different interpretations, which obviously begs the question, what do you mean, though? And that's the psukim say different things. So Lamanda Amar Pnehem Yishalachiv Haktiv Upnehen Labayit. Doesn't it say Upnehen Labayit? So they say Lo Kashya. Kam Bizman She Yisrael Osim Ritzono Shel Makom. Kam Bizman She Ein Yisrael Osim Ritzono Shel Makom. Okay, it depends. So there was an assumption. Again, we get back to this miraculous nature of these kruvim, that when the Jews were doing what they were supposed to, so the kruvim turned and faced each other. Okay, and when they weren't doing what they were supposed to, they turned to face the Hechal. So what about the interpretation that says that they were facing the Echal, as if that's the ideal, right? So what do you do with Haktivu Pnehem Yishalachiv? So what do they say? Dimitzadeh Atzdudeh. Here you can have both. What do you say? They were facing the Echal, but their heads turned to face each other. Okay? Which makes sense in the light of this picture that we see where they're in a straight row, obviously they're not facing each other. Mamash. But what are they doing? Their heads turn to face each other. I actually was reading an article about Elchai Tohar Lev, and his mother quoted, I was just reading this last night, and his mother quoted this thing about the Kruvim facing each other and how the Shekhinah rests when people, in other words, it's the connection between people that causes the Shekhinah to be there, and that and you can prove it from this issue of the Kruvim facing each other, that it's with the, you know, Achdut of people, that's what causes God's presence to be there. Okay, so now, here's a source. Detanya Unklus Hager Amar. Okay, here's Unklus. Comes up. He says here, Kruvim Maset Tzatzuin Hen. Umitzudadim Pnehem Kitalmid HaNiftar Me Rabo. Okay, so the Kruvim were made like children, right? They were made in the image of children. And they faced, right, and they're, their faces are like a Talmid Hayose Me Rabo, right? That here the concept is, right, when you're a child and you're leaving your rabbi, you don't turn away from him. You, like people walk backwards from the kotel, you're constantly facing him. So that's, here's a support for the second opinion, that their faces turned each other, right? That they were always looking at each other. Okay. The Mishnah. Right, so even though your body's one way, right, your face is always looking that way. Okay, new Mishnah. Now we're getting totally off the topic of the Kruvim. Finish with that. We're moving back to more mundane issues. Mi sheyesh lo bor lefanim mi beito shel chavero. If you have, this goes back to, okay, now we have to remember, we learned all these sugyot about if you have a bor and in someone else's property, and if you buy the board, do you get the path with it? Or if you sell your house and you keep the board, you get to keep a path? Do you not? You're mecher ayin yafa, mecher ayin ra'ah. Okay, now the issue is, we assume at this point, okay, we're beyond those issues. You have the board and you have a path. Okay, you've resolved it. Whether you had the path no matter what, or you had to buy the path, or whatever it might be, or you made an agreement with the owner that he would give you a path. You have a bor lefnimi beitel shel chavero. So now the question is, what are your rights to this path? Remember, you have rights to the path to get to your bor, but what are your rights limited in any way? So, nichnas b'sha'a sh'derech b'nei adam nichnasim, v'yotzei b'sha'a sh'derech b'nei adam yotzin. You can't go any time of day that you want. You can only go when it's typical for people to be going, which the assumption is that it means daytime. You can't go to your bor at nighttime. Okay, the assumption is you can go during typical hours where people would be out and about. I assume the issue is you don't want to get in the way of this person's privacy in his own house, that at nighttime privacy is more of an issue. So, ve'eino machnis behemto mashkemi boho. You can't start bringing your animal, right? Let's bring all our animals and the animals will drink from the boar, right? What a headache for the person who owns the property that you're traipsing through with all your animals. Ela mimalei umashkemi bachutz. Okay, what do? You fill up your boar, you bring it out, and you go water your animals outside the person's property. It's not appropriate to start bringing all your animals through. V'zeu selo potachat, v'zeu selo potachat. Now we have a strange halacha. Each one, both the owner of the boar and the owner of the property, are allowed to put a lock on the boar. Okay, so now we understand why the person who owns the boar can put a lock on the boar, but why is the owner of the house going to be able to put a lock on the boar? The boar doesn't belong to him. So we'll get to this in the Gemara. Potachat lehecha. Right, where's this lock going? Amar Rabbi Yochanan shnehem labor. Rabbi Yochanan says, both these locks that we're discussing are locks for the boar. Bishlama ba'al abor. We understand that the ba'al abor can put a lock on his boar. Ba'e lishdemure. Maya Debore, he wants to protect the water from the boar so that the property owner doesn't go in and start taking his water from the well. Ela, Bala Bor Lamale, but why is the Bala Bor putting a lock, the Bala Baye, why is he putting a lock on the boar? Amar Rabbi Elazar, Mishum Chashad Ishto. Okay, this is a strange one. So now, I'm going to give you a few different interpretations of this. Okay, one is that the concern is, He doesn't want you coming to use his boar if his wife's at home and no one else is around, because maybe he'll wander into the house and go sleep with his wife. So therefore, he can only use the boar when the balabayit opens the lock for him. So the balabayit has to be home. So the Rashbam, I have to read you the Rashbam just because it's too good not to read. He says, "Aval hashta de'eino yachoso mishum chashad ishto. Aval hashta de'eino yachol ishov below balabayit. Lo yikanes l'sham ad sheyavo balabayit." Okay, that's what we said. Aval mishum geneva. Why wouldn't you worry that maybe he's going to steal the guy's stuff? Like maybe the guy puts a botachan on his house so that the guy doesn't steal his stuff. Shelo yignov chafatzav shel balabayit lo cheshinan. The assumption is the woman's always home and she's protecting all the stuff in the house. And the woman doesn't leave the house. So because the woman doesn't leave the house, he doesn't need a lock on his house, but he needs a lock on his wife, you could say. Maybe. Okay, that's one answer for Chashad Ishto. Other people say that maybe the concern is that people will see him wandering into the person's property and people will suspect that he's sleeping with the wife. And they might not know that this guy owns the boar there, and they're going to see him wandering into the house when the husband's not around, because the neighbors always know who's, right, the comings and goings of people. So they might suspect that he's going to sleep with the wife and it'll just look bad for him. It's not that we actually suspect him of doing it, but it doesn't look right. Okay. New Mishnah. Mi sheyesh lo gina lifnim miginato shel chavero. Again, this is going to be the same concept. You have a garden inside the garden of another person. Nichnas, and assuming, right, you've gotten yourself a path for whatever reason. Right, there's a few different possibilities of what could have happened here. It could be you were shutafim and you just split the property, or you bought one from the other. Nichnas b'sha'a shebnei adam nichnasim v'yotzei b'sha'a shederech bnei adam yotzim. Okay, so you can't, again, you go in during normal hours. You can't go during irregular hours. You can't bring people to buy your stuff. Okay, let's say you want to go show people, oh, here are my cucumbers. You can come buy them. You can't start bringing them into your garden. This is an interesting one. You acquired this path for what purpose? To get to your garden, your inner garden. But let's say you want to get through your garden to someone who lives behind your garden. So what do? You're on the opposite side, right? You want to walk through the path that you now own rights to, go right through your garden and go to some shortcut to get to someone behind your garden. You're not allowed to use it for that. You only have rights to this path to get to your garden. You don't have rights to use it to get to somewhere else. B'hachitzon zorea et darko. The outer guy is allowed to plant the path. He can plant things on the path. Now, why would you think this was an issue? Of course, right. In other words, there's partial ownership of this path. He owns the path, but you own rights to get through to get to your garden, right? But you don't own rights to plant there, so obviously he owns rights to plant there. Now, you might have thought, what? If he plants there, it's not going to be as easy for you to walk on the path to get to your stuff. You're going to have to walk, very carefully or cautiously or... So, therefore, you might have thought maybe he can't plant there, but no, it's part of his field. He's allowed to plant there. He only sold you rights to get there. But in this case, natnulo derech minatzad midat shnehem. Okay, let's say now the assumption is the Rashbam says who's natnulo derech? The court. If the court rules that the owner of the outer garden needs to give you a path on the side of the gardens. Okay, so we have two gardens here. Okay. We have the inner garden and the outer garden. Okay, this is the inner, this is the outer. There's a path through his house. But for whatever reason, he doesn't want you walking through that path. So the court ruled that we're going to give you a path. We've seen this in the past, by the way. We're going to give you a path on the side. Okay, it's part of his property, but not really, right? It's on the side of the property. Okay, so now, if we give you this right to the path on the side, now the first thing you have to understand is, this path on the side makes it much less convenient for the inner guy, because he can't take a direct route, he has to go through the outside, so it's not so convenient for him. Because it's not so convenient for him, the assumption is, we're going to give him some expanded rights that he doesn't get when he gets to walk through. So since he gets this road on the side and it's not as convenient, we're going to make some other things easier for him. So therefore, since it's on the side and it's not going through the person's garden, nichnas b'shashu rotzeh v'yotzeh b'shashu rotzeh. He can go anytime he wants. Okay, he doesn't have to go when it's a popular time for people to be going through. U'machnis l'tocha tagarin, and he can bring in anybody he wants, right, through the space. V'lo yikanes mitocha l'toch zadeh acheret. He still is not allowed to use it as a shortcut to get through to other places. V'zeh v'zeh einan rasha'in l'zora. And nobody can plant here. So now the question is, why is nobody allowed to plant here? Okay? So the assumption is the Baal HaBayit, the Baal of the outer one, can't plant here because, again, the inner guy gets expanded rights. What does expanded rights mean? That we're going to make the path easier for him. It might be out of the way, but it's not going to have anything in it so that you can just walk through very easily. So that's one answer. One second. It could be that the inner guy can't plant there for possibly two reasons. One reason is, again, this path doesn't belong to him, so therefore he has no rights to plant there. Another possible reason could be that if he plants here, then it might cause him to move to the side of the road, in which case he might end up traipsing on the outer guy's field. So it's also a way to prevent him from accidentally walking in. You know, we want to make sure that he has a very clear path so he doesn't end up straying and going into the outer guy's field. Okay. I just want to see if there was something else I wrote down. One second. Okay, next case. The Gemara. So the Gemara brings up a new case now. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmua. Ama Beit HaShlachin Ani Mochir Lecha. What's an Amah Beit HaShlachin? A Beit HaShlachin, if you remember, is an irrigated field. It's a field that can't live just by rainwater. You have to bring water into the field. So if you purchase a water channel to get to your field, okay, so the guy says, I'm selling you an Amah Beit HaShlachin. Notein lo shtei amot letocha, v'amah mikan v'amah mikan l'agapeha. Okay, if you pass where's the Koran? There's a picture there, okay? I'll show you. Of a nice, it's basically a water channel. So the water channel, okay, I'm going to give you two shots about what this is talking about. Okay, the water channel has to be 2 amma wide and 1 amma on either side for the banks of the, one amma? Yeah, amma mikan va amma mikan lagapea.
He's talking about length when he says I'm giving you an amma.
No, he's talking about width. It's 2 amma wide and the banks each have to be 1 amma wide. It doesn't talk about the length. Okay, because if you say, I'm selling your water channel, first of all, the question is he selling him, there's a debate about what exactly he's selling. Is he selling him land so that the guy can build a water channel? And then the question is, what's the minimum width that the guy can build the water channel, right? In other words, what's the maximum? He could say, oh, you told me water channel, so that gives me right to X amount of land. The guy might say, what are you talking about? I wanted you to make a narrow water channel. He could say, no, these are the basic rights of how wide I get. It's not talking about length. It could be the length is more obvious. The other option is he could be purchasing a water channel that's already there and he says, oh, but this is not minimum, right? I get a little bit wider because this is too small. There's another nusach which actually reads a little bit differently, which is he gets 2 amot for the agafim, 1 amma, 1 amma, but the water channel itself is only 1 amma wide. And what's the proof for that? What's it called? It's called an amma. Why is it called an amma? So I'm going to give you three different interpretations. And one says, because the typical amma is 1 amma wide. And then you'd have to have a different nusach to this gemara. Okay? Another reason, so Tosfot says, no, the amma comes from the depth. The depth of it is 1 amma, and that's why it's called an amma. And another answer is, what's an amma? It's a forearm. The shape of a water channel is like an amma. It's long, right? And you know, the shape of it is more domain. That's why it's called an amma. It has nothing to do with the size of the water channel. Okay. What about if you're selling an amma beta kilon ani mocher lecha? Okay, so now you can look here also in the Quran. They give a picture. This is when you wanted to make a much smaller water channel, okay, where the idea would be to wash clothes or to give water to your animals or something like that, not to irrigate your field where you need tons of water. They would make this contraption, which worked like it was a big stick, which on one side was weighted, and the other side had a pail at the bottom, and you would take the water out from there and channel it manually into some smaller water channel. So the question is, right, obviously this is going to be a smaller water channel, so the measurements are going to be smaller. Beit HaKilon ani mocher lecha noten lo amah achat letocha v'chatzi amah mikan v'chatzi amah mikan lagapeha. Okay, so here you get one amma and half an amma on either side for the banks. Botan agafayim mizoram. Who gets to plant on the banks? Okay, forget about this picture where it looks like it's made out of cement. The assumption is the banks are made out of some sort of dirt, or earth. So who gets to plant this earth? Again, it's like the same question about the path. Who gets to plant there? Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Baal HaSadeh Zoram. Okay, he says the Baal HaSadeh gets to plant there. Rav Nachman Amar Shmuel, Baal HaSadeh Not'am. What's the difference between Zoram and Not'am? They both agree that it's the owner of the field, who's the water channel is going through his field, right? It's not the guy who bought the rights to the water channel. The guy whose land it is gets to plant there. But the question is, what does he get to plant? Does he get to plant crops or does he get to plant trees? So now the Gemara, what's the difference, right? So manda amar zoram kol shekein notam. If you say you can plant crops, then obviously you can plant trees. Umanda amar notam, but the one who says you can plant trees says specifically only trees, aval zoram lo, but you can't plant crops. Why? Because chulchule mechalchule. The assumption is that plant roots go very deep. If plant roots go, the opposite. Tree roots grow very deep, and plant roots don't. So if you're talking about building something on the banks, on the sides there, you need the top part to be strong. So if you're growing crops, it's going to erode the, make it weaker, the land there, because the roots don't go so far down, so they really mess up the land right around there, and it's going to weaken the banks of the water channel. Whereas if you're planting trees, the roots go very deep down, and they're not going to ruin the stuff near the top there. It's not going to get in the way of it.
But wouldn't the plant roots suck up some of the water?
Could they suck up the water? I don't know. I guess
the tree roots would,
right. In theory, they could suck up water, but I guess they're not so worried about that. Maybe because the water's above that level. I don't know. They're not so worried about it. Again, it depends whether you say, right? I guess everyone would agree that you can be Not'am. Not everybody agrees that you could be Zoreah. Yes. So, right. Everyone does seem to be in agreement that wouldn't be an issue. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel. Amat ha'mayim shekalu agapeha. Mitakna me'otas sadeh. Biyadua shelo kalu agapeha ela be'otas sadeh. Let's say the banks get ruined. You know, they kind of erode and fall apart. So where do you get the earth from to fix it? So what do they say? So kalu agapeha, they were ruined, right? They're finished. Mitakna me'otas sadeh. You're allowed to use the earth from the person whose field you're in, even though, right, you don't own rights to that earth. But what's the assumption? Biyadua shelo kalu agapeha ela be'otas sadeh. So a few different interpretations of what this means. Because it's clear that if, right, what happens if the banks get ruined, right? The dirt just goes, the earth goes right into that field. They're not going to go far out of that field. They're going to stay in that field. So therefore, it's, right, you build a sandcastle. Where does all the sand, when it breaks? It goes right next to where you were building. So you just rebuild using the same sand. So that's the idea. You can take the dirt from the guy's land because the assumption is whatever was there dissipated into his property. There's another answer, is that the plants from the field caused it to collapse. And that's why he's allowed to rebuild it from that person's dirt. Because it's almost saying, it's your fault, Baal HaSadeh, that my banks got destroyed, and therefore I get to use your stuff. The third option is to say that there's an assumption that if you're purchasing a water channel within my property, then I know it's part of the deal, that my earth is going to go to rebuild if it falls apart. Okay. Matke plara papa. Vle male mayechash beluchalar acha. Maybe you could say your water, and as maybe the owner of the field could say, your water is ruining my ground, my dirt. Elamara papa shamanakin kibela la bala sadeh. Saying you can't say that because that's part of the condition, the stipulation of when you buy the field. That's what I was saying a minute ago. Mayechash beluchalar arach. Sorry, it's the opposite. It's saying the owner of the field could claim it's your water that ruined the banks. It's not my plants, let's say, okay, or it's not. So then they say no, but you knew that going in. When you sold this water channel within your field, you knew that might be a possibility, and therefore you took upon yourself to give the earth to rebuild it. So he doesn't have rights to say that. Okay, next case. This also we've learned before. Next Mishnah. Mishaita derech harabim overet letoch sadeyu. If you have within your field, you bought this property and part of it is a Rashid Arabim. So you don't own that part. So right in the middle of my field, there's a public path. That's an annoyance for me, right? So what would I be smart in doing? Nitala v'notem lehem min atzad. So I say, instead of, you know, this Rishut HaRabim going right in between my property, right? It's a headache. So I'm going to give you a Rishut HaRabim on the side, and I'm going to take this back and put it as part of my property. I'm going to take my property that was over here. I'm going to cut the boundaries, you know, and basically give part of my property to Rishut HaRabim. And I'm going to close up that area and not let people through. So what does the Mishnah have to say about this? Masha Natan Natan. What he gave, meaning if he took his property, this part used to be his property, and now it's Rishut HaRabim. That's now Rishut HaRabim. He can't take it back ever. Masha Natan Natan. Umash Vishelo Lo Higio. But what he took to be his really isn't his. Okay? Or we're going to see exactly what this term means. First, the Gemara is going to think it means something, then they're going to explain it another way, so I'm going to leave it at that. Derech HaYachid, now they're giving you basic amounts of things. Like we started a few Mishnayot ago about the house, what the minimum shear of a house, if you're building a Beit Chatanut Lebeno or a Beit Almanut Lebito. So what's a Derech HaYachid? If you're giving someone a path to walk through to get to his bor, let's say, so that's Dalet Amot. The assumption is you've sold him Dalet Amot. So if you try to claim, oh, this is your path and it's narrower than that, the guy could say, no, you promised me a Derech HaYachid, I get 4 Amot. Now there's a debate about all the next cases, okay? Because these are cases where generally they're not items that are sold to people. You don't generally sell a Derech HaRabim, okay? You don't sell a path for you know, people, so or all these other paths. So one way of reading this is just that the Mishnah is defining for you what the standard Rishut HaRabim is. What is standard? We'll see in a minute, Derech HaMelech or Derech HaKever. Other people say no. What we mean is, if you sell someone a path and you say, I'm selling you a path that's going to be like Derech Rabin or like Derech HaKever, or you say within the sale that this is the kind of path I'm selling you, then again, we're going to say what the minimum amount is for each of those. Derech HaRabim, 16 Amah. We know this, right? Rishut HaRabim, the assumption is it's 16 Amah wide. Derech HaMelech, Ein La Shi'ur, right? What happens when the king comes in, right? They have a huge... Right, you have all the cars following him and all the entourage and tons of, right? So basically, there is no amount. If you say, I'm giving you a Derech HaMelech, the guy can claim as much as he wants. Derech HaKever, what's the Kever? Also, right, people come to bury people. They come out in masses. And when you have a burial, you don't want a path that's too narrow that people, you know, it will deter people from coming to the cemetery because they'll say, or from, you know, to be melaveh, the mate, they'll say, oh, there's no room, right? So Derech HaKever, also Ein La Shi'ur, okay? HaMa'amad, Dayanei Tzipor, okay, so the Ma'amad, right, this is, I have to refresh my memory, this is, I think, people who come,
I think it's the
Shura
that they do after the cemetery.
Right, the Ma'amad Shemelaveh Mate. You think it's the Shura? That's what it is?
It's the cemetery returning from the cemetery.
Okay. So it's right. It sounds like the Shura when they're walking after the cemetery. They say it's only done with at least a minimum of 10 men. And therefore, Dayanei Tzipor Yamru, Beit Arba'a Kabin. Okay? They give this amount, which is about 40 Amah by 40 Amah. Okay? Tov, which is obviously a lot wider than the Derech HaRabim of the Shesh Esrei Amah. So now the Gemara says, Amai shelo lo higio, linkot pizra veleti. If I take over this land, right, that was Rishut, it used to be Rishut HaRabim, right? Now I put it back into my property and I say, instead of this being Rishut HaRabim, I'm giving you something else. So first the Gemara assumes, shelo, but lo higio, that it's his, this can become my property, but he can't do anything to ensure that people don't walk through there. So the Gemara says, "What can we? Why is that the case? If it really is his now, linkot pizra velativ, he should be able to take a stick and sit on the side of the road, right? Sit right there at the edge of his property and threaten to hit anybody who walks through his property, right? If this is by law his, which is the first assumption of the Gemara, we're going to see that the Gemara assumes in the end this isn't his. But first they think shelo, meaning it's his, but lo higio, but he can't." Enforce the fact that it's his. So what do they want to infer from here? If the fact that this belongs to him and yet he's not allowed to enforce it, what do you learn from here? Shma mina lo avid inish dina lenafshe. A person can't take the law into his own hands, because if a person could take the law into his own hands, this guy would be allowed to sit there at the entrance with a makel in his hand and hit anybody who, you know, or threatened anybody who tries to come through his property. So what do you see here? Lo avid inish dina lenafshe afilu bimkom pseda. Now there's a whole issue, we're going to get into this, I believe it all comes up in Sanhedrin, about avid inish dina lenafshe. Can you take the law into your own hands? Can you not? Can you, if there's going to be a hefsed, you know, maybe you say you can't take the law into your own hands in general, but if it's going to cause you a financial loss, which in this case, everyone's going to walk through and traipse on his crops, they're going to ruin his crops. So, what do you see here? Lo avidin ishtina lenafshe. So, Amar Rav Zvi, Mishmei Derava, no, you missed the point, he says. Gzera shema yitein lam derech hakalaton. In theory, he should be allowed to take this and make this his own. But they don't allow him to do it because it's not that it's really his. It's not really his at this point. But why is it not really his? Because we made a gzera that we're worried that he might give them a bad path. In other words, if he gave them an equally good path, then it would be okay. But because we're worried that maybe he might not give them a good path, then we don't let anybody ever do this because we're worried that he might take this land back and give them some crooked path that would be annoying for people. We're going to see three answers now. The second answer is, or Misharshim Mishmei Derav Amar, Binotein Lehem Derech Akalaton. The Mishnah is only talking about a case where he gives them an alternative path that's bad, it's crooked. If he gives them a good path, then this can be his entirely. And then it sounds like maybe he could even stand on the path and enforce it. Okay? Although it's not clear, because it doesn't exactly say that. But the Mishnah is only talking about if he gives them a bad path. And the third is, which is the most interesting to me, Rav Ashi Amar, Kol Menatzah Derech HaKalatoni. Krova Lezeh, Rechoka Lezeh. We've seen this before, by the way. Anytime you give a Derech Menatzah, right, the people living on this side of his property, that's going to be a headache for them to have to walk all the way around his property to get there. So while it might be, this is what we always say, right, status quo. You can't change the status quo because, right, always better stay with the status quo because people are happy with this Rishit Arbi. Maybe it'll be better for someone else over there, but it'll be worse for someone else, and he's not allowed to do anything that will inconvenience even one person. Okay? And therefore, any kind is going to be considered a Derech HaKalaton, right? So the three answers are, one is it's a Gzera so that he doesn't, in case someone were to make a Derech HaKalaton. The other is it's only relevant if he makes a Derech HaKalaton. And the third is, any Derech is a Derech HaKalaton. Okay? Which is an interesting tfisa. Okay. Tomorrow, if people will come, I can teach at 7:30. Does that work for people? Anybody?
Yes.
Yeah? Okay. If one or two people are here, I'll teach. So, 7:30.